Thanks from the Fast Blasters, the movie I was talking about that had the Hall of Record, the Hall of Souls, the Guff. It's called Seventh Sign with Demi Moore. And that had to do with, you know, how the Guff was emptying out of souls, and that once it did, there'd be some biblical proportion problems, almost like what we're having right now. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Jim Tucker, your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Jim Tucker. Jim, have you ever had any stories where children later on in their life talk about what life might have been like in the womb of their mother? Do they remember this? Do they talk about hearing things or anything strange like that?
We have had some that did. Most don't, but we have had some that did. And some will talk about what the experience is like in the womb. Others will talk about events that happen in the parents' lives and say that they saw them. Had one case where the mother was pregnant when she and the father got married, and she was noticeably pregnant, so she didn't have any pictures of her wedding up. But she was going through some old stuff one day and pulled out a picture and showed it to her son, and she said, "Do you know what this is?" And he said, "Sure, it's your wedding. I was there. I saw the whole thing." And she said, "You did?" And he said, "Yeah, you walked up some stairs, and then you gave each other rings, and then you ate some cake." And in fact, they got married like in a gazebo and had walked up a lot of stairs together, but there was no way to tell that from the picture.
Let's take a few minutes, Jim. Where can people get the book? It's a great series of research articles. Where can they find it?
Well, the book, again, is Life Before Life, and it should be available in all the bookstores, as well as Amazon.com and that sort of thing.
St. Martin's Press is the publisher.
Yes, St. Martin's Press, and it is. I've written it for the general public. It has a lot of case reports in it of a lot of these interesting cases, and I also try to pull this together and see what we can take from it.
Have you ever been on one of these cases where it was just truly emotional? Can you share any of those with us?
Well, there are certainly a lot of emotions that come up in these cases. And the case of Sam that I mentioned earlier, where he remembered being his father's father. The father talked about the fact that when he was an adult, he was able to share things with his father, but his father was not able to communicate back with him. And his sense is that if his father has, in fact, been reborn as his son, that the son came back in order to be able to communicate with him and share that connection that he really was not able to do at the end of his life.
Do they act differently toward, let's say, the child? If they truly believe, for example, it's their reincarnated father or grandfather, do they act as if the kid's the kid, or do they act as if the child is the grandfather or father?
Yeah, you know, I've talked with parents about that, and they say that they see the child as the child, even though they also believe that it's a part of their parent or grandparent that came back, but that they are able to just see the child for who they are.
You're talking
about emotional cases, and another one that comes to mind is a little boy in Michigan who was actually born with three birthmarks that matched defects in his half-brother who had died of cancer when he was only two. And with those birthmarks, you know, the mom felt that there was a connection with the previous boy from the start, and then this boy did start talking about the previous life, and that was obviously very emotional for the mom, and it's clear that she and this boy have a very tight connection that presumably is at least partly due to the grief that she felt when her older son died.
Must the past life have been completely terminated? Or is it possible that it evolves when both are still alive?
Well, we do have some cases of what Ian Stevenson calls anomalous dates cases, where the we don't have many, but we have some where the previous person died after the child was born. In almost all of those, the child became very sick, and probably near death, and then after recovering, seemed to have these memories. So that would suggest perhaps that during that illness, that it was sort of an opportunity for a soul or consciousness or whatever to come in and sort of take over.
Well, that's, I guess maybe the other one died, but instantly the other one did come, and the body didn't die. Something like that.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's an even murkier area than the rest of it to try to figure out exactly what could happen to explain that.
Let's go back to the phones if we can. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George and Doctor. I have a question. My wife is an astrologer and metaphysician, and we had this, back and back thing about reincarnation. But I used to tell her, because I used to feel this about myself a lot, that I was not reincarnated, and I don't even know if this is a word, but I thought I was deincarnated, because I used to feel that things that would happen in our time, I felt like it was like no kidding. In other words, like I felt like I was more from the future than I was from the past. And I would see things that would happen. Sometimes I would say, hey, I could have invented that, or I could have said that. Is that something that you've heard before, where people they just say to themselves, like this is like I didn't come from the past. I came from the future and came back here. I mean, is it something that we have in ourselves sometimes where we just talk about certain things that we know, like when things happen, we say to ourselves, "Well, I knew that was going to happen." And that we knew it was going to happen because we didn't come from the past, we came from the future. So instead of being reincarnated, we're deincarnated.
Does
I know
anybody
it
talk
sounds.
that way? Well, no, it sounds weird, but that's a possibility. Has anybody ever talked about coming from the future? I know it's difficult to verify that, but I'm curious.
Well, yeah, that I guess would be impossible to verify, but it's not something people talk a lot about. But of course, people do talk about deja vu, where they have a sense that they've experienced something before or experienced a place before, and it's usually where they can't quite get a handle on it until once it's happened, and then they think, oh, I remember that conversation. I had it before. How to explain that is open to suggestion, really. I haven't heard many people put it in the terms of coming back from the future, but maybe that's worth thinking about.
Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with Dr. Jim Tucker. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
I listened to your show for years. You and I are both, and it's a great show.
Well, thank
First-time
you.
caller, I've always kind of just enjoyed the topics. But my question is, it goes back to your discussion right before this previous caller, as far as a person passing away and then I don't know if you want to call it reincarnating or whatever. I mean, but I've always, my grandfather passed away when I was a year and a half or 2 years old. And now today, I'll hear stories of him. I was way too young to remember him passing away. But I'll hear stories now, and they're more of somebody resetting a memory to me almost, instead of.
As if you were there?
Well, yeah. Have you ever woke up? This is a really bad analogy, but you were out drinking, 18, 20 hours later, somebody says, hey, you did this, and you're like, oh my gosh, I did do that. And it's the same way with me. I'll hear these stories from my mom or from, other relatives of my grandpa, and I'll be like, wow, it's almost like an enlightening. not like, oh, that's a really neat story, but more like that's, oh, geez, I know that. I should have known that. And it's almost like you're, not a deja vu, almost like a reverse deja vu, if you will. I mean,
well, but do you think you were him?
Yeah. The older I get, I'm 37 now, and he passed away, 35 years ago, something like that.
Okay, and so you would have already been around for a couple of years before this happened.
Yes, and there are stories. I mean, you know, moms always make up stories. Oh, you were grandpa's little boy. So, I mean, I'm sure he had five daughters. I'm sure I've got four cousins when we're told the same story.
Does anybody in your family think that you might be him?
My grandma, kind of, before she passed away, she never really said so, but it was little instances like we would be over at her house, and one thing I remember, we were sitting out at the kitchen table, all the kids, and grandma's making a snack for everybody, and she comes out with ice cream. And this is a really stupid analogy, but I've never liked ice cream. I always liked sherbet for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have been, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And my grandma brought everybody ice cream. She's like, we're having ice cream. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is great ice cream. And all of a sudden, she brings out a bowl of orange sherbet. She's like, here's some orange sherbet. And I was like, why am I getting orange sherbet? And she's like, well, your grandpa never liked ice cream. It's just odd things. And as I got older, she would always buy, at Christmas time, she would buy presents for all the grandkids.
Right.
You know, $15, $20, whatever, for each kid.
Yeah.
And as she got older, she was really sick, and she couldn't go shopping that year. So she had all these envelopes on the Christmas tree, and she passed them out to all the kids, and they had, like, $20 gift certificates to them. And I remember thinking, oh, great, this is going to stink. Money for Christmas. Who wants money for a Christmas present? Well, I opened up mine, and there's a note in there that says, please stay and help me clean up. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
That's weird, yeah.
Right. So after I stayed, everybody left, and you figure she probably had 20, 25 grandkids, whatever it is. And after everybody left, I'm helping her clean up, and I was getting ready to go. I was like, all right, Grandma, I got to go. You know, I was like 18, 19 years old. I was home on leave from the Navy. You're anxious to get out. You know, you're not really appreciating your grandma at that
age. You love your grandmother, but you don't want to spend the whole day there, right?
Exactly. So I get ready to leave. She's like, well, come here. She'd gone out and bought one present that year, and it was for me. It was a stupid sweater. I mean, looking back, you know, you really appreciate it. But at the time, you're like, oh, great, a sweater. And I said, well, why did you get me a present? She's like, well, your grandpa used to give money back to people when they would give it to him for a present. And she's like, I figured you were the same way. And it's just these little things like that. It's never spoken. In fact, I'm on my cell phone in the garage now, so my wife can't hear me because I've never... Seriously, I mean, you never speak to people about it because you almost think you're a half of, you know, half of a whack job.
You have never shared this story with your wife?
The little bits and pieces, but never the actual realization that what I think is going on.
You do know she listens to Coast to Coast on a regular basis.
We have a 3-year-old. She's in bed.
Are you sure? You being a first-time caller, she's probably saying, this guy sounds just like my husband.
She might be. I don't know. I'll go ask her if she knows who Art and George are later.
I am curious, though, to see why your grandmother was pretty convinced, because it sounds like she was, that you were her husband.
I do not know that. And, I mean, there's obviously family resemblances, and there's, I don't know if you want to call it inherited traits. You know, your grandpa walked this way, your dad walked that way, you're going to do that too. But it's always been a little bit more than that. It's more than your dad would open the door with his right hand, you'd do that same thing. But it was more of like just you've always known. But it's, and trust me, I'm a long-time listener, and I've heard a lot of things on this show that are really entertaining, but I'm kind of like, wow, that's got to be kind of out there. But this is one of those things that when I heard the guest on tonight, I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah, you know, I've got to talk to this guy.
All right. Well,
it's just intriguing.
Let's get the take of you, Dr. Jim Tucker, on this particular circumstance.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One is that there are a lot of cases where the memories seem quite sort of murky for the people, and the kids, there'll only be certain times where they can remember them, and they can be kind of vague, and then something in the environment will happen and stimulate the memory. And that sounds similar to what it is here, where, you know, he never really had full concrete memories, but things will happen and it'll sort of register with him as if it was a memory. The other thing is the fact that he's never told his wife, and we get a lot of American cases like this where the families have not told anyone.
Well, the thing is, you don't want to sound, I hate to say it on this radio program because I really enjoy it, you sound like a whack job. Just tell somebody, hey, I think I've been reincarnated from whatever, especially when he was alive when I was born.
Yeah, and do you know if you had any significant illnesses when you were a couple of years old?
Significant illnesses back then, I mean, at just two. Growing up, my biggest remembrance of any kind of illness when I was a kid was just, I always had, like, great teeth. My mom's like, oh, you're always sick, and the kid, we gave you tetracycline all the time, because back then, you gave that to little kids, and come to find out, turn their teeth green, grain. But, I mean,
You weren't, like, dying at two or anything like that?
No. Mm. You know, pneumonia, kid stuff, whatever. I mean, crap.
Well, of course, pneumonia would be pretty serious.
But. Yeah, but, like, back in the late 60s, I mean, you could have had asthma, and they don't diagnose like you did today, like, oh, he's got pneumonia, or he's got a cold. Yeah. Or.
All right, Jim, without him being sickly, is it possible that the grandfather's consciousness, the soul, whatever, could have taken over when he was 2 years old? Have you ever heard that?
I personally can't think of a case like that, but that, of course, doesn't mean that it doesn't happen.
Huh, that is something. Okay, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Let's go to our wild card line. We'll grab a call here before the break. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing, Dr. Jim? This is John. I'm calling from Austin, Texas, and I was wondering if someone doesn't have the past experience of something happening as a child, later on in life you have quite a number of deja vu experiences. Could that be tied into this situation?
Well, it could be, but those usually, there's not really anything to verify. I mean, in most cases where the people have a sense that they've been somewhere before or experienced something before, but it's not really tangible enough for somebody like me to really investigate it.
And it's not really a past life.
No, some people, when they talk about deja vu, mean they go to a new place and it seems like they've been there before. So, you know, then you can kind of wonder.
Well, you know, the marvel of all of this, of course, to me, if one believes in reincarnation, is where these souls are. That's what I'll call them. Before they enter the new body, what's out there?
That's a very good question. And again, even though reincarnation is a concept that's foreign to a lot of people here, it doesn't necessarily conflict with Christian ideas of heaven or, you know, other ideas. I mean, what's out there between lives is something that we don't really know anything about.
Has anybody ever talked about being in hell and then they get out of there?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I guess the memories of heaven maybe are a lot more pleasant.
I would think so. Stay with us. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with our guest, Dr. Jim Tucker. We'll get a final update from Richard C. Hoagland on the happenings of the remnants of Hurricane Katrina, as well as Richard's been monitoring that situation for us, and he will all week long. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the water pouring from Lake Pontchartrain into New Orleans has stopped, because the lake's water level is equal to that of the water level in the city, according to a chief engineer. And Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor and EnterpriseMission.com head, this is finally the only good news I've heard about this entire situation.
Yeah, I've actually seen the helicopter shot showing that. It looks like almost a still, beautiful lake, and it's eerie because you can see all those houses up to their eaves in water, and there's not a riffle of wind, and it's like a mirror. But the canal and the lake and New Orleans are equal.
If they can stop the breaches now and they start doing whatever they do to build up these levees, how long do you think it'll take to clean up the water out there? This is going to go on for months, isn't it?
This is months, and as I said last night, maybe a year, because they confirmed tonight when the head of the Army Corps of Engineers, was being interviewed by Larry King. He said that the pumps alone are not going to do it on any reasonable time frame. And I think your guest in the first hour also said that. What they're planning to do when the water level in the lake goes down another foot or two is to actually punch holes in some of the other levees. And it's kind of like having a bunch of ice cube trays where you have the little separations.
Yes.
And you would tip the tray. And if you're thinking of gravity, and not all of New Orleans is at the same level, you want the water to flow to the lowest level, which of course it's going to do. And at some point, the lake becomes the lowest level. So if you're very deft in breaking the levees and then rebuilding them, you can let gravity drain the water, a lot of it, back out of New Orleans before you have to pump out the rest. At least that's the theory that I heard.
Oh, I hope they know what they're doing.
I don't think they do because these levees are berms. And what happens with berms is if you get water on the wrong side, the water gets inside, it becomes tapioca pudding, or think of sugar melting in the rain.
Absolutely.
This is a nightmare. It should have been handled decades ago. This was a disaster waiting to happen. And, you know, it just is a tragedy that it has happened. I wanted to end tonight on an interesting note because we have a lot of people out there, we talked about communications, who are trying to find loved ones, neighbors, friends, whatever. The radios and the CB and the cell phones are not doing it, but the internet may. So if they want to scribble down this internet address, NOLA.com, NOLA.com, they have missing persons forums, lost and found forums. They have specific forums for each parish, like the French Quarter, the Bywater neighborhoods, etc. You go there, and there are people able to, in this incredible crisis, reach the internet and let people know they're alive and they're okay. And that's the best we can do tonight, George. And hopefully tomorrow night we'll have better news.
Okay. Give us some fuel updates tomorrow too as well. Okay, Richard?
Will do.
Richard C. Hoagland monitoring that situation, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. We'll be back. We'll take the rest of your phone calls with our special guest tonight, Dr. Jim Tucker on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jim, what's the future hold for you? You've got this book out. You've got some of the research. You're going to continue doing what you're doing. What's next on your plate?
Well, I've been trying to focus more on American cases, and that's partly because even though we've studied over 2,500 of them, since most of them are in Asia, it's easy for people to ignore the research if they want to and just sort of blame it on being a foreign phenomenon of it due to the cultures there. And I'm hoping, frankly, with the book that more Americans will learn about our work and contact us so we're able to get more good American cases. I think if we're able to collect a series of American cases that are as strong as the best Asian ones, then people will need to seriously consider this work.
Why does it seem to be coming more from Asia and other countries?
Well, it's hard to know if the cases occur more there or if we just learn about them more. I mean, when I was in Thailand, we would hit pockets where literally we couldn't ask for directions without hearing about another case. And, you know, here you can't walk into 7-Eleven and ask if people know about children who are talking about previous lives. It's sort of like one of the callers you had where he hadn't even told his wife about it. We've got plenty of families who have never told a soul about it, including grandparents or that sort of thing. Then if they find us, you know, on the internet, then they contact us because, of course, we keep it confidential. But these are things that happen in families that a lot of people tend not to talk about here.
Next up, let's go to the phones again. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. I'm Bill from Washington.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Jim. Mm-hmm. It's great to be on the air with you folks tonight. I want to thank you for taking my call. I've listened to you for many years. I've never gotten through before. However, I must say I am comforted listening to all of the things that come from your great show. I've felt over the years that I was nuts sometimes with some of the things that have happened to me, and it's just really nice to know that you and the people there at AM Coast to Coast are keeping this alive for everyone.
Absolutely. And you know what? You're not nuts, because a lot of people have probably experienced the same things you have.
Well, my story is about myself, my grandmother, and my own daughter. I was born really sick. I wasn't expected to live. My grandmother refused to give up on me, and through her efforts, her love, I survived. I've had at least 21 life-threatening accidents or illnesses in the first 21 years of my life. And through all of that, my grandmother was there, and she always helped me to understand what was going on. And like you were just saying about people not talking about it here, that's one of the things that she instilled in me before I ever started school. Don't talk about this to other people. Keep this under your hat. They'll think you're crazy. They'll think you're nuts. They'll label you, all these kinds of things. So I think it is part of our society that we're inculcated into this concept of worrying about what other people think. And as a young child, I never came out of the closet. Even to this day, I've kept this really quiet and to myself. But when my grandmother died in the late 80s, I, because of my connection with her, and it might sound nuts, but I still stayed in communication with her over the years. And then when my daughter was born, that communication stopped. And when my daughter was born, she was the spitting image of my grandmother. The moment she was born, we had multiple names picked out for her, a list of 20 names long, months before she was born, trimmed it down to three names. My grandmother's name was never even on the list, ever. The moment she was born, I saw my grandmother's spirit in her and knew that that was going to be her name. She's now coming up on 12 years old, and I've had a lot of health issues. I went into health care, became a licensed health care professional. So for many years, I've been doing that. My grandmother instilled in me a really great respect for animals of all kinds, to help them when possible. And this is one of the things that my daughter has always had in her. I'm one of the few people, I've never heard of anyone else that's ever had a hummingbird land on them. I have. Well,
yeah, that's true. I don't think that's ever happened to me.
My daughter has had the same kind of connection with animals, taking care of birds that are injured and all kinds of little quirky things that were the same kind of things that my grandmother did.
So are you convinced your daughter is your grandmother?
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Do you treat your daughter differently? Is it strange?
No, because the love was there before.
Sure.
And so it's just, you know, I can't really differentiate the love between this daughter and my other two daughters. You know, I've been blessed with three children. I was told I would never have children. So, that's another whole story, and I'd love to share with you at another time, but I want to try to stay focused on this and appreciate what Jim is doing here, bringing this from his perspective into a scientific analysis, really giving it the impact that it needs from that perspective specifically, to give it the credence that it's due. You know, all of these other things can come about in the understanding of people throughout the world, that we're all really connected and that we're a family of spirit beyond this life. And once we all understand that, then we can all come together and really make this world what it really needs to be.
Now, Jim, let me ask you, can someone like Bill, who has so incredibly strong feelings of his grandmother, can he actually draw that soul to, let's say, his daughter, before the daughter was born, obviously, but draw that soul to himself?
Well, I think that's certainly worth considering. I mean, again, with our cases, it's not just random where they end up, and a lot of them do talk about being in the same family, and there may well be that. It may well be the case that emotional connections act like a magnetic pull and draw souls or draw the consciousness into particular children.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello. She is gone, or he. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, this is Mary Jane from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, I'm so glad I got on. I'd like to tell that before I was born, I was at my workbench or table or something, and there was other people in the room too, but it was quiet and calm. And I was summoned to the authorities or someone that decides these things to choose my parents. And when I went there, I think there were three people, three men or something, and they showed me through, it was like a screen or a pool on the floor, but it ended up looking like through a telescope. One set of parents, they were a young couple, and then they showed me a family. There was a whole bunch of children, and they said, which one do you want? And I said, the first young couple looked kind of scared, so I didn't want to go there.
So you had the option, though, huh?
Yes, I had the option of two. They gave me the choice of which two, and so I chose the larger family because they said, why? I said, because it looks like it'd be a lot of fun to be in a large family.
And were these memories that you've always had?
No, they didn't come to me until I was about 53.
Hmm.
But they've stuck steadily with me, you know, as if I was there since. And I'm 66 now. And then I went back to my duties or whatever I was doing. And a nice, peaceful, calm atmosphere. And then they came and got me later on. They said, it's time. And they said, you promised. So I went down and I was born. But when I came into the world, it was so noisy. And I had all these kids jumping around the table because I was born at home.
Did you go to the wrong family?
No, the midwife was washing me and bathing me on the kitchen table or something. All these kids were jumping up trying to look at me, you know, and I still remember which one. And there was one little short one, and there was a tall, skinny one, and there was this real pretty one.
Well, how did you remember the event?
I have to tell you this. It was so noisy. I said, and this word I used for a baby, I couldn't take all the clamor, and I went back. And they said, I went back to the beans.
You went back?
Yeah, so I don't know if I died or what. But they said, no, you promised you would go to that family, so I had to come back, you know.
How do you recall now that event before you were born with those people who sent you around? How do you recall that?
How do I recall that? It's just there in my mind.
All right, what's your take on that, Jim?
Well, it's certainly similar to some of the reports that we get from the children, who not only talk about the previous lives, but also talk about time between lives. And certainly some of them do talk about sort of looking down and seeing their future parents and deciding to go to be born to them.
Yes. And then another thing is when I was giving birth to my third child, I died and I was at the ceiling and I went all the way out. And this was before the astronauts went to the moon, and I saw the Earth like as if I was from the moon. You know, the blue marble and the blue and white marble in the sky. That was before we ever had images of it. And the same three tall beings met me, and they said, is there any reason you need to go back? And I said, yes, to take care of my baby and my husband and my other children and any future children. And zap, I was back.
Hmm.
Sounds like a pretty good memory with stuff like that. These children who seem to come back, do they carry on any special skills if the previous person had any? And again, let's say, you know, they were a great composer.
Mm-hmm.
Does the child become a composer?
Well, who knows? I mean, looking at child prodigies, as far as I know, none of them have ever reported previous lives that, you know, would have led to it. But there are children where they're not necessarily prodigies, but they seem to pick up on particular skills a lot more easily than other kids. And those are ones that would connect back to what the previous person did or talents that the previous person had.
Let's go to our final caller east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yes, hello. This is Josie from Rhode Island.
Hey, Josie, go ahead.
You know, most of my life I've had this vision or memory of, like, being in a bassinet. It was all draped in black, and these women, mostly women, I've seen women coming, they're looking over me, and they're all dressed in black with these big picturesque hats with veils, black veils over their face. And I'm in this big, big palace. It's all in gold, and there's no furniture, maybe a few chairs, and that's it. And this is a memory I've had most of my life, and I don't know what that is.
How much of this, Jim, is created memory? How much of it is actually happening?
Well, there's no way to know. I mean, again, a lot of people will report memories like this, but if there aren't specific details that can then be verified as accurate for one deceased person, there's no way to determine how much of it may be fantasy versus actual memory.
Do you think you, Jim Tucker, might have had a past life?
Oh, I have no idea. I certainly have no past life memories, and who knows?
What about our interests, though, Jim? You know, I've got certain hobbies. There's some things I'd like to do. Is it possible I may have picked up those traits from my past lives, which I, of course, don't remember?
Well, I think it is. It certainly is possible. I mean, again, you'll see people who have hobbies or interests that are completely different from anybody else in their family or anyone else around them, but they just really connect to that material and seem very interested in it.
Now, what do you think this is, this transfer, once again, as we are ready to say goodnight? Is it the soul going from one to the other, or is it memory? What do you think it is, assuming it is?
Yeah, well, assuming that, yeah, there is some connection. I don't like the word soul only because it has a lot of connotations that, you know, may or may not be supported by this work. But there does seem to be, if these cases are what they appear to be, some vehicle or a consciousness that includes memories, but also includes emotions and can include traumas that goes from the end of one life and then carries on into the next life.
It's a lion. Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.